listening to the Benton County Public Podcast. This is Dan Krall. I'm your host today, and I am joined by Ann Thwaites from the Board of Commissioners Office and the Public Information Officer for Benton County. And today we have the privilege of speaking with Commissioner Zan Ogiero. Zan is retiring, and we'd like to thank you for taking some time to be with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And thank you, Anne, for your time today.
Thank you, Dan.
And at the end of December 2024, Commissioner Zan Ogiero will retire at the conclusion of her second term on the Benton County Board of Commissioners. Her 8 years in office have been shaped by a global pandemic, major shifts in the national political climate, as well as the local impacts of climate change, inflation, changes in state law, and more. Today we're talking with her about the highlights and opportunities of the last 8 years. I'd like to start off by asking you, in your 8 years of service to Benton County, you've had a tremendous impact. I'd like to ask, what part of your tenure are you most proud of?
It's a very difficult question to answer. It's still a little too early to be able to see the whole 8 years and get a sense of those highs and lows. But I can point to a couple of things. For one, the COVID pandemic was really a tragedy in terms of lives lost and the shutdown of schools and the loss of businesses. But it was also a real opportunity in the sense that there was an incredible amount of state and federal funding that came our way. Everyone pulled together. We built a lot closer relationships across the cities, the county, the school districts, Samaritan, Oregon State University, all to be able to make it through the pandemic with as few lives lost as possible and as few businesses closed as possible. We also built much closer relationships with our community-based organizations and worked with them closely on issues around food and homelessness and health. So all in all, I think we've come out of the pandemic with a stronger fabric of community and a sense that more is possible and we can do things better. On the other side, we were able to use some of those dollars to take some infrastructure projects much further down the road. We will break ground on a new courthouse on our Community Safety and Justice campus sometime after I'm out of office this coming spring. We already have a crisis center that is due to open this spring to provide mental health crisis and respite for folks that are in need. That will be downtown. We have a new Children and Families Mental Health Center that was an opportunistic acquisition by the county. And thanks to Representative Rayfield, we were able to acquire that building without using county dollars. We have been able to enrich our programs. And we've enriched those programs in an area that I've been privileged to work, in that intersection of behavioral health and criminal justice, and in working upstream children's behavioral health. And so I'm just very grateful to have been able to provide the new facilities to house these programs that are so critical to our community.
Yeah, those do serve an important purpose.
Indeed. The other notable aspect of these last few years is the fact that we've had so many retirements with the kind of silver wave of retirements, all of my peers in the baby boom. And it's meant that we've had a real opportunity to change practices and approaches and build better collaboration across departments. So even internally, we've been able to make a lot of change.
Do you have faith in the younger generation to take the reins?
I'm excited about the younger generation stepping into roles on the County Board of Commissioners with Commissioner-elect Gabe Shepherd and other young folks stepping into city council roles. I think that they have very strong values and a different sense of can-do, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they make of our programs and local agencies.
Anne is going to ask our next question for Commissioner Ogiero.
In responding to that last question, you mentioned some of the highs and lows that you experienced during your tenure. You must have learned and changed a lot from all of these experiences. What stands out to you as something you have learned from being an elected official and a commissioner? What do you think has changed you?
I think that the main thing that I have learned is how to become a better listener. And that's been a lifelong learning lesson. I'm sure I'm not done. But I tend now to listen not just for what people are saying or the policy prescription that they're advocating, but for what their values are and where they're coming from. And then to try to find that common ground so that we can find solutions to the situation that they may be dealing with, or if I'm working with a commissioner from another county that has a very different political view, so that I can better understand what we are both aiming for and whether or not there is some sort of a compromise approach. I grew up in Seattle. I'm an urban kid, and Corvallis is the smallest town I've lived in. So I also learned a lot over the last few years about rural community and natural resources dependent communities, and how to work with my colleagues from those communities to try to find solutions that address everyone's needs, and increasingly recognize that there aren't one-size-fits-all prescriptions, and that is sometimes a real challenge. It's hard to try to craft policy and procedure when you've got to try and bend it in two or three different ways.
Especially with all of the different language requirements of any given legal bill.
Indeed. And I haven't gotten into legislating at the state level. I've just been an advocate up in Salem, but spent more time there than I expected to. That was one of the more surprising things to me, was just how connected and woven together the state and county programs are. Much of our funding comes from the federal government or the state government for specific programs along with specific mandates. And unless counties play an advocacy role in Salem, we end up with programs that are not implementable or not practical or underfunded.
Is that common that happens?
Oh, yes. And the other challenge is that there are programs that the legislature has passed in the past, but then as they move forward in time and new legislators come on board, they forget the commitments that they've made to counties to fund certain programs. And that makes it very challenging. Some of those examples are the basic taxation and assessment function at counties that supports county revenue. Another is corrections, community corrections, and parole and probation. There were agreements to fund that program at cost, based on cost studies, but the legislature hasn't honored some of those commitments over time, so puts more and more of the cost burden back on the county.
You mentioned it being a surprise to you how enmeshed state and county government are. Are there any other things that have come as a surprise to you as you've served as commissioner?
I think that the other thing that was difficult for me, especially initially, is that I came from a role as an executive director of a nonprofit. And in that role, I was the doer, the implementer. And I have, over my professional career, also been a project developer and was the one to do the fundraising and hire the people and make everything happen. As a commissioner, my role is no longer to be the doer. It's really to be the policymaker, the legislator, and to initiate projects or programs, to bring new ideas to the county, but not to get too involved in the details of implementation. And sometimes that's meant I've had to sit on my hands and be patient. Government works a lot more slowly than nonprofits do, but has a lot more resources. So it's been a learning experience. Making hasty decisions or jumping into a new program without thinking about it can overextend the county, both in terms of staffing and resources. So going slow sometimes can ensure that we will have this program for a long time to come rather than just a blink of an eye and gone. And it's important to be able to build resources for people that they can count on. one of the things that excites me the most in this role is the ability to connect people. So I've spent a lot of my time out in the community, meeting with community members, with members of nonprofit organizations, with legislators, you name it, and just soaking up all the new ideas, best practices from other places, bringing them back to the county and to our other organizations here. And it's been exciting to see some of these new ideas implemented and coming to fruition.
You talked about being an urban kid and living in, growing up in, and living in larger places. Why did you make Benton County your home?
Well, like many other people, I came here to go to school. I came here to go to OSU to actually pursue a doctorate in geography. And why geography? Because I could do whatever I wanted and call it geography. It was a wonderful way to build my own degree that was multidisciplinary. I've always been interested in big systems and not in the deeply detailed studies of a specialist. So I studied salmon management across the North Pacific and got to eventually travel all across the North Pacific and to work with conservationists and scientists in that role. But I moved back to Corvallis after working on international conservation projects out of Portland because Corvallis is such a beautiful place to live and to raise children. It is easy to get to the coast, to the mountains, lots of open space, and with the college here, there's no shortage of cultural programming, and the community is becoming increasingly diverse thanks to Oregon State University. So it's just a wonderful community or set of communities intertwined. We also have really appreciated the high level of investment by this community in community resources. So Corvallis has a fantastic library, pool resources, etc., and parks and natural areas. And all of those things are what make this a great place to live.
Did you grow up in the city of Seattle or was it the suburbs?
I grew up in the city of Seattle, not too far from the campus of the University of Washington because my father was on the faculty at the University of Washington and lived in various neighborhoods surrounding the university over time.
What was it like growing up there?
It was a much sleepier town back then. And like many people my age, I have stories of being able to play all day out in the neighborhood and not check in at home for hours and come home at dinner time. And we spent a lot of time in a park that was a block from my house, Ravenna Park, which is a deep ravine. And it was like being out in the woods and there was a creek running through the bottom of it, picked berries and made huckleberry tarts, things like that.
I didn't know huckleberries grew in Seattle.
If you know the right places, they do.
You have to be an insider, apparently.
How would you like Benton County staff and community members to continue the work that you have started over these last 8 years?
I think that it's really important to continually scan the horizon for new ideas and best practices and not be shy about importing new ways of doing things. Focus on continuing improvement and efficiency and effectiveness, mostly that effectiveness piece in terms of actually delivering services that are meaningful to the community in a better way. I think that it's really important to think about both short-term and long-term perspectives and to toggle between the two and make decisions not based on what's right in front of you only, but to think about the long-term implications. Think about our kids, think about other people's children, and same for the environment. And then there are a couple of other bylines that have been important to me and that I learned from working here at the county. One of those is health in all actions. One of those, that's a term that's used by our public health folks. But in every decision we make, we need to be thinking about how is this going to affect the health of community members, the health of the economy, and are we working upstream to ensure that our community members don't have problems? That's always the best outcome. And lastly, to use an equity lens. to make sure that we have access to our services, whether it's for folks that are challenged by a language barrier or accessibility due to inability to climb stairs or a vision impaired or whatever. And if people had just come from a very different cultural background and don't know how to access our services, and transparency, just being really clear about what we do as government, why we're doing what we're doing, and explaining things in a way that it makes it possible for people to truly engage with us as decision makers and for them to feel like they have a voice.
What are the continued pressing issues facing Benton County?
There are several. One of those that's most immediately on people's mind is the application that's pending by Republic Services to expand the landfill. And as many of you may know, the landfill doesn't serve just Benton County, but another dozen counties or so in our waste shed. And we have embarked on a conversation with those counties about sustainable materials management and how to best reduce the volume of material that we all generate so that we can kind of get ahead of the problem. But we also have to consider, or my successors will have to consider, the conditional use permit that is pending by Republic Services to expand the landfill. That is going to be a big issue. And the county has a fixed period of time in which to address that. So over the next 6 months or so, the community will be hearing a lot more detail about that proposal. There will be public hearings and ways for people to be involved. And to put their perspectives in play. The other issues that are on the horizon are that mental health and substance use disorder treatment is still lacking. With the respite center, we will have more capacity for short-term help, but we still need help for long-term care for folks that have severe mental illness issues, and especially with co-occurring issues with addiction. And that is going to remain a challenge. I'm really glad it's a priority of Governor Kotex, and I think that there will be continued investments made by the state government and the county to help to bring new service providers in and to have more residential beds for folks that need longer-term treatment for recovery. The other is that housing is going to remain an issue. Homelessness, we are making some dents. Our Coordinated Homelessness Response Office, working with Corvallis and Philomath, is making progress in rehousing people. They've rehoused almost 30 families and lots of more people, because many of those families have children, and they are continuing to do that great work. But we also just need housing of all stripes, all levels of cost. It's a barrier to people moving here at almost every income level at this time. There just is no inventory on the market. So that's going to be an all of Benton County issue to address. And we are looking forward to working more closely with Corvallis and the other cities to figure out how to solve that one. Again, one of Governor Kotek's top issues, and she will and her resources will come to bear here as well. The other is one that is harder and, you know, I think difficult for people to wrap their heads around sometimes, but we do need to replace our jail. Our jail is undersized for a community of our size. We have to send people out of area if they need to be held for any length of time, and that makes it difficult for them to get the support they need from their relatives and other community members. It also, our jail is just substandard. It's falling apart. We regularly have trouble with water supply and sometimes with power, and it's just no way to keep anyone housed. So I think that that issue is going to be on the horizon for my successor within the next 4 years or so. And we will see where the new board decides to go to address that issue. One thing that's wonderful is that we do already have the land. We do know that any new jail would go on the Community Safety and Justice campus alongside the courthouse just south of Hewlett-Packard. And lastly, I would want to make sure that my successors kept an eye on water issues. It's not a huge issue for us here. We have plenty of availability, but I don't think that's going to remain the case. And we've talked over the years about further collaboration among the cities here in Benton County with the county on water supply. And I'm hoping that those conversations will advance and that we can make sure that we have the adequate water that we need for years to come.
We're speaking with Zan Ogereau, who is the outgoing Benton County Commissioner after 8 years of service. You're listening to the Benton County Public Podcast. This is Dan Krall, and I am joined by Ann Thwaites from the Board of Commissioners Office, the Public Information Officer for Benton County. We'll be back in less than a minute.
Short time that I've been able to work with you, I have really appreciated you as a role model and the example and the guidance that you have given me as a new Oregonian, as a new resident of Benton County, and a new county employee. I have heard many female leaders within the county comment about how much they value your mentoring and how much you have helped them to grow. What advice do you have for rising female leaders?
I really enjoy mentorship, and it's heartwarming to hear that the advice that I've given people has made a difference. I think finding a good mentor is the first step. In any organization, there are bound to be a few folks that will be good mentors. Doesn't have to be another woman, but it certainly helps because there are issues that women face in the workplace that men might not. The other is that there are a lot of formal learning programs out there. There is a good leadership program at Lynn Benton Community College, and I know that the county, through our Human Resources Department, has supported some folks to go through that program. There's also Leadership Corvallis, which is a wonderful way to learn more about the city and the county and the different sectors that here in town. There's also an analog at the state level called the American Leadership Forum of Oregon, and that's another way to learn about the entire state rather than just one city or community. And I was lucky enough to participate in that program my first year as a commissioner, and I've made lifelong friends and colleagues that are from all over Oregon through that program. The National Association of Counties has a good leadership program too, and I think the county tends to send one or two people to that program per year. It's not quite as rich because you don't have the in-person activities that you do for some of these other local programs, and it's those local networking opportunities that really make a difference. I would encourage any young leader to consider, as time is available, to get involved in a local organization, whether it's something like the Chamber of Commerce Greeters, which doesn't require much of a commitment at all, or joining a local board, because it's through that kind of service that you also build a different network. And I've found that for leadership, one of the most important things is to be able to tap into all the different networks and not just one. If you think you know all the people that matter in a community, that's when you've been in your role too long, or you just don't get it. You've got to be able to always hear the new voices and hear the outlying voices as well as the voices in the middle in order to really make the best decisions.
That's not always easy. Sometimes with everyone's different frame of reference or maybe even unknown intentions that we might perceive, it's probably not always easy waters to navigate.
It's that old saying, you don't know what you don't know. So you have to listen carefully and ask all the right well, not the right questions, ask lots of questions and be curious. If you don't understand something, ask the whys, ask people what motivates them, and that often will get you much better understanding.
What are you looking forward to in 2025?
First of all, rest and some travel. Spending a lot more time with both my immediate family, my husband, and then my parents and siblings. My family is somewhat scattered. I'm looking forward to being in Seattle a fair bit more because my parents are in their 80s and 90s, and want to make sure I soak up every minute I can with them. I also am looking forward to spending more time outdoors. We have a big garden, and I'm not sure how much I'll plant this year if I'm going to travel, but I want to be more active. I've had enough sedentary time for the last 8 years to last me a long while, so I'll be getting back on my bicycle and probably looking to do some dancing.
Oh, what kind of dancing do you do?
I will do just about any kind of dancing, but what I've really enjoyed in the last few decades is contra dancing, and also I enjoy international folk dancing, freeform dance. So, and there's a lot available here in Corvallis, so I'm going to soak it up.
Do you attend raves?
I've never been to a rave.
I heard you say a few days ago that you're also looking forward to playing music. What kind of instrument do you play?
I have a dusty fiddle at home, and I am an advanced beginner on the fiddle. I can make recognizable music, but I'm really looking forward to learning how to play with other people. I grew up playing the cello and played in a much more formal settings, quartets and orchestra, but yeah, I'm looking forward to learning how to jam.
I had some time in a string quartet myself, and I have to say, as an adult, I find myself drawn to folk music, Scottish music. I love it all, and so I understand exactly where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful and heartwarming, and there's nothing like walking into a party where there are people playing music and just enjoying that way of being together.
Mm-hmm. An intimate setting with live music is, it has a feeling that you can't get anywhere else.
And will you be staying in Corvallis? You mentioned you'll be traveling, but are you still going to be stationed and based in Corvallis?
I'm not going anywhere. We will be here and engaged in the community in one way or another.
And we'll see you out on your bike and playing music, perhaps?
Indeed.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you.
Today's guest has been Commissioner Zan Ogereau, who at the end of December 2024 will be retiring at the conclusion of 8 years of service on the Benton County Board of Commissioners as she finishes up her second term. Thank you again for your time today.
And thank you.
This is the Benton County Public Podcast. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. My name is Dan Krall, and our co-host today has been Ann Thwaites of the Board of Commissioners Office. She is the Public Information Officer for Benton County, and we've been speaking with Zan Ogereau. If you'd like to find out more about Benton County, you can go online to bentoncountyor.gov.